Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to author G.D. Grace's A Touch of Grace, Literary Magic, on Blog Talk Radio.
The purity of freedom. We are responsible to ask questions for clarification. We were born to evolve and grow in intellect. We were never designed to be oppressed and belittled. Our hearts and minds were built to be loving and compassionate. Our identities are a reflection of our soul, and in our souls resides pure freedom. God bless that purity of freedom. I am a force to be reckoned with. I am a light vast and bright. My spirit is immortal. I am the hope of future generations. I, artist. Today is Sunday, January 12, 2014. The time is 1:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. I am your host, GD, and welcome to I, artist. His name is Eddie Ceron Pierce. He is founder, publisher, and an author at Rainbow Room Publishing House. His book, Love, Something Infinite, deals with themes of relationships, overcoming fear, and the frightening reality of an HIV-positive status. Today, he joins us to discuss the inspiration behind his books, and I welcome him with open arms to the show. Eddie, it is an honor to have you on the show. How are you this lovely Sunday?
Wow. Even if I wasn't before that intro, I am great. Thank you so much.
Well, you know what? It's so deserving. In reading the summary of the book and just knowing you and following the great accomplishments that you have, you are just an incredible human being, and I just thank you for being here on the show.
Thank you again.
All right. So let's start at the beginning. Where were you born, and what were your earlier years of life like?
Well, born and raised in Chicago, Illinois, especially even as we're relating to this, a lot of people probably think that it's all about marketing, but this truly is what my life is like. My life has always been about reading and writing in some shape, form, or fashion. And some of my earlier memories were, I'm really dating myself with this, but my parents had a set of Childcraft encyclopedias. I know a lot of people out there might recognize the name. They were little white encyclopedias, or about 14 books in a volume. And so I spent a lot of time reading mythology and folklore. I'm from a very Christian traditional background, so I read a lot of Bible stories. Eventually that turned into reading comic books and watching a lot of TV, definitely a lot of TV, but anything that engrossed me in a lot of story, anything that allowed me to experience the stories of, you know, other people, and that later turned into, you know, me emulating those things and modeling those things primarily as a hobby and as a form of entertainment for myself. And so, you know, pretty much all of my earlier years were, obviously typical kid in the respect of, you know, running around with your cousins and your friends and your neighbors, and coming from great parents, you know, coming from a great family. I think that's probably the thing that makes my experience a little different, that I spent a lot more time with stories, you know, in various forms.
Okay. So can you share with us what compelled you to write a book that deals with so many heavy subjects?
By the time that I actually started writing the story that would become the first book, Love, Something Infinite, I had already done a number of different little short stories and things like that, even way back as a kid. But by the time I got to that, I'll never forget, I was actually on an airplane on my way to Las Vegas to do an interview for a job. And I hadn't written anything in a very, very long time. And I decided I was going to take a notepad and just write whatever came out. And so like maybe the first page or two of the manuscripts, you know, came out. It just kind of was just something to do. I had to admit, I kind of got into the story a lot, especially because I was drawing a lot from my own experiences. And it turned into just a cathartic exercise. It turned into a way for me to take the different demons or whatever you want to call them that I was wrestling with in my own head, put them on paper at a safe space just for myself and kind of explore them even more, looking at issues of chronic depression, which is something that I've dealt with in the past, looking at insecurities and not being able to accept self because of being gay and it conflicting with so many other aspects of my life, or so I thought at that time. And eventually it actually turned into the fact that I was going back for my master's. I needed so many pages of prose to even apply for my master's at Chicago State. And so I kept writing the story so that I could get into the master's degree program. And then the master's required that I have a thesis. And I felt, well, I already have a great story going, so let's keep going with it. And then one thing led to another. And something that started off as a cathartic exercise, something that was just about a release for myself, you know, took on all these. It's just very much like, and I'm pretty sure you can attest to this, it took on a life of its own, and it grew and it gained its own purpose and changed from one purpose to the next, the next, the next, until I was literally there looking at the completed manuscript and thinking, you know what, this story helped me a whole lot, and it's possibly something that could help a lot of other people. And that was when the decision was made to self-publish in 2011.
I think that's great. And the one thing that stuck out for me is that you are someone who is of a high intellect. I mean, to actually achieve a master's degree and then to actually write the thesis. And so what was that process like for you when you transitioned from just it being a thesis to actually becoming a published novel?
Well, actually, a good thing for me was that I was doing as I mentioned, I was at Chicago State University, and I was doing a program, a creative writer, Masters of Fine Arts in Creative Writing. And the program was really great in the sense that it had three main components. One was a literary component where we, you know, basically were taught that writers need to read other people's writing, which is something that a lot of writers, you know, don't do. They don't think to read and just kind of, you know, study the craft. And then there was the workshopping component, which was basically us doing our original writing and trading that off to different classmates, different teachers, and that sort of thing. But the final and probably the most important one was the publishing component, where we were taught the business side of writing. And so basically the thesis that I was writing, I was being, instructed in all three of those areas. And basically the thesis, by the time we got done, was meant to be something that could be published. Obviously, a lot of, as I understand it at least, a lot of colleges and universities, they do publish theses in in the libraries and that sort of thing. But, you know, basically by the time I got done, minus some editing here and there and, you know, obviously working out covers and barcodes and all of that sort of thing, the manuscript was pretty much complete and ready to be published.
That's fantastic. Your novel also includes a poetry element. And when I think about that concept, I think about the movie For Colored Girls and how it incorporated poetry into the dialogue. What drove your decision to include poetry in this novel?
Honestly, I wanted to do something different. I've read a number of things myself. You and I have talked about it on several occasions, knowing each other for a while now on Facebook. You know, I follow, you know, people like Elin Harris, James Earl Hardy, James Baldwin, and that's just black and gay literature. I mean, I read all kinds of things, from comic books to pretty much everything, and not knocking it, but everything but romance novels. They just don't get me there. God, just don't do it for me. But basically, looking at all of those different things, I'm sorry, I'm kind of losing my train of thought. Basically, looking at all those things, I kind of got a little distracted.
That's okay.
Actually, I'm sorry. Go ahead and just repeat the question again, because I'm sorry. I'm sitting here by the window, and some just kind of went past the window. Was a little
no,
crazy.
That's okay. I'm telling you right now, from a creative knows another creative. So what drove your decision to include poetry in this novel? Because it reminds me a lot of For Colored Girls, I envision.
Got you. So basically, like I said, I'm going to turn away from the window now.
Okay.
Basically, the idea was to try to present, you know, something different. You know, obviously, like I said, reading a lot of different literature, we both have, a lot of the readers and listeners both have. And, you know, you always just want to do something that stands out. And so one of the things I was looking at with the poetry, which I don't do a whole lot of writing of poetry, was the idea that as I was writing the novel and looking at the different chapters, I felt like there was like an emotional emphasis, like almost a period I wanted to put on the end of each chapter, or maybe even, you know, a preface to certain chapters. So I looked at some of the poetry that I had written in the past and saw some very similar themes, and a lot of the things I was writing in the poetry was very much related to some of the experiences that I discussed in the book. So I kind of basically was kind of making them almost like commercial breaks in between chapters. Kind of thing. So it was largely out of the idea of trying to do something different, trying to do, you know, something super artsy. so far it's been met with, you know, some interesting reviews here and there. I've had some people that said that, oh God, you know, I sat there and skipped over the poems altogether and read the whole story and then went back and read the poem. And I was like, you know what, that works for me. As long as you got something out of the whole experience, that's fine. So.
Yeah, well, and I imagine when you were saying that they were mostly like commercial breaks, I kind of envisioned them as also being introspective thoughts that were so relevant to the story, and it's amazing. And like you said, as long as they go back and read it, that's like the biggest thing, especially as a writer. So let's talk a little bit about the character Calvin's visit home, and it required him to face situations he left behind, one being the possibility that he infected another person with HIV. So how did you approach his mental state, and how emotional was it for you to actually write from an HIV-positive perspective?
Well, to be totally honest and just put it out there, I've been HIV-positive for about 8 years, I think. And when I wrote that portion, that was something that I was actually living with. Basically, at the time, I was starting a new relationship. I had been in it for a while. And, you know, we had been together for a little bit, and we, you know, decided to take the step of, you know, going to get tested. And, you know, from the different conversations we've had, we both, you know, felt that we had been very, very safe, you know, in our habits sexually and everything. And even in my case, I had a test maybe, gosh, let me see, not even a year before, and there was, like, no sexual contact in between. And I, you know, it came back negative. But the day that I went in for this test, it came back positive. So we were assuming that something happened right before that test or whatever. And I even recall getting sick and us not knowing what was what. But as it relates more so to the story was the fact that I felt that I was, because it was a very big emotional thing, and my partner at the time was very supportive. To this day, he's been very supportive. We're not together as an item anymore, but he's always very supportive. But we needed time away from each other for me to kind of get my head around it and for him to get his head around it and to make sure that he was safe and that sort of thing. And in real life, I felt that that was the end of the relationship. I felt that I had lost, you know, the potential love of my life because of some random night that I had with somebody, you know, in the past. And so, once again, going back to the idea of catharsis, you know, a cathartic act, that was my way of getting that off of my chest. That was my way of just, you know, okay, let me almost separate myself from this and look at it from a distance and kind of look at it more, you know, objectively and just even exercise it out of myself. So it was a very personal thing. A number of the events in the first book are, you know, true to life. I just changed names, changed dates, and, you know, that sort of thing. So I was really, you know, as an actor would say, method acting, I was really writing from, you know, my personal truth. It actually wasn't, I can't even say that it was difficult. Back at that time, even when I was writing it, I had to admit I never thought that I would come out and tell everybody about my status. But, you know, I've seen where it's helped a lot of people to know it, to see that someone can go through that and come out on the other side, you know, still have the status, but nothing else in your life changed. And in fact, my life has gotten so much better since then. So
I think that's incredible. And when you talk about relationships and staying committed in relationships, I know it seems to be hard for people of color, particularly African-American males, to actually stay in committed relationships. Why do you think it is so hard for so many to stay in committed relationships? Now, I know this particular relationship had the element of the HIV positive status, but even outside of that, it almost seems to me like there's really not a lot that we see in the realm of committed same gender loving relationships between African American men. Why do you think that it's so hard for us?
You know what? I think that's definitely one of those life issues or societal issues or whatever. It's just so multifaceted. I wouldn't even begin to be, you know, borderline arrogant and think that I can put my finger right on the pulse. But some of the things that I think about, though, are the lack of role models. You know, we don't see that type of relationship, you know, displayed enough. When it's oftentimes depicted, it's depicted as something that is meant to be ridiculed or something that's meant to be judged or a relationship that doesn't work or, you know, something that's doomed to fail. You know, we don't, unfortunately, have the Cinderella stories. We don't have the Snow White. We don't have the Little Mermaids or whatever else Disney produces. We don't have stories that say, you know what, you're going to go through this life, you're going to be this hero or this heroine, and at some point you're going to connect to your Prince Charming in the case of being gay. Yeah, your Prince Charming. We don't see things like that, and I feel that, you know, especially looking at it from a writer's standpoint, we don't give enough, I think, power and I don't know, respect to the idea of stories. Stories, while in a lot of cases they are fictional, they have a great influence on us. You know, the more we hear these messages and see these things, they shape our lives, they shape our mindset. I even think about the fact that, you know, we often have a power struggle in male gay relationships because of the fact that, you know, all we know is a male and a female dynamic. And so someone is always assumed to be the male and someone is always assumed to be a female, and that sometimes turns out to be the problem because no one wants to take that role as the female. Or, you know, I think it's largely just that it's not been, quote-unquote, normalized. It's been oftentimes demonized. You know, we don't have enough, I think, good role models to show us that, hey, here is a healthy relationship. Here's what it looks like. I was very fortunate to see that with my parents, my mother and my stepfather specifically, who've been married for over 30 years now. And, you know, I brought in a lot of that into my past relationships, but there were still some elements that just weren't the same. They're just not going to click. You know, it's going back to the idea of there having to be a male and a female. There is always something that's slightly different. Shaded slightly different. That's not to say that the love can't be the same as in the case of a heterosexual relationship or the trust and that sort of thing, but when it comes to our roles and that sort of thing, it doesn't always translate as easily, you know, even in the case of me looking at a great relationship between my mother and my father. But, you know, it was a great place to start. You know, I could see here's a team, here's a man and a woman who love each other. Here's a man and a woman who love God and submit to God first and then to each other. And, you know, they've just been like a dynamic duo for all of my life, you know, but that's not something that I think enough of us see in general. And then even more so in the case of, you know, the black gay, you know, culture, we don't have enough role models in that respect.
I absolutely agree. I know that, you know, there's the E&I and Polk cinematic experience, Noah's Ark, and, you know, you have the four friends, and, you know, it's very humorous, and you see a couple of couples in there. And when you look at some of the situations that they go through, it's, you know, there's really, you know, who someone is sleeping with, it extends beyond that, and it always has. And I think that, especially in the African-American community, the total acceptance for gays and lesbians is stunted with this infatuation or a trying to understand how someone could be when, in reality, they just are. And I don't know when or if we'll ever get to that point in our lifetimes, but I could certainly see that there is a level of improvement that is happening there, because it's not as hard as it was back in the 80s, per se, to be identified as being a same-gender loving person. So what impact do you feel this novel has had in improving the level of understanding and acceptance for same-gender loving people?
You know, one thing that I really appreciated about this whole experience of writing this book and releasing it and then subsequently writing a second book, Love from Behind, was that I had a lot more. I was surprised, actually, by how many straight or heterosexual people have read the book. And it was something that, you know, that I was taught when I was writing, and even, you know, I really ascribe to today, the idea of writing in universal truths, writing about things that everyone can relate to. You can't necessarily relate to the specific instances, but in the case of, you know, just using my book for an example, you know, we can all relate to the idea of a loss of a loved one, a relationship that breaks up. We can all relate to fear. We can all relate to depression and that sort of thing. And so that was something that I really wanted to play up a lot. And that's another thing where the poems come in. You know, the poems are specifically talking about those specific emotions without having to have a storyline attached to it, you know. And so when I look at the fact that some of the people I know that read the book that happen to be straight and have no experience as far as a homosexual experience is concerned, a lot of them were able to explain to me that they were gratified by the fact that they were able to see what gay people go through. Actually, even my current pastor, she read the book, and she was like, you know what, thank you so much for that, because that gave me insight into how gay people see the church and how the church sometimes treats gay people. You know, it's very easy in a lot of instances for us to push any segment of society aside and not even look at them and not even look at them as a person. One of the things that I was hoping for, and I see that it did happen, was for people to put a face to gay. It's very easy, I think, for us to hate and discriminate against something when it's, you know, when it's not personified, when it doesn't have a physical, tangible, something we can touch, taste, and feel. Think about everybody in the world that you know that says, oh, I have a gay cousin. That person, in a lot of instances, is way more tolerant than a person who does not know or even acknowledge the fact that someone in their family is gay. When you can pair this thing, in this case gay, that you have no love for with this person that you have all the love in the world for, then you have to start looking at it differently. You know, then you have to look at it and say, oh, gay isn't just this thing. Gay is a person. Gay is my brother. Gay is my sister. Gay is my cousin, my sister, my son, my daughter. You know, so I have to look at this differently. I can't just immediately write it off, demonize it, judge it, push it to the side. You know, and in the case of even, like I said, with the example of my pastor, now we have to look at it as something that, you know what, I don't have to, quote, unquote, embrace the lifestyle, but I have to embrace the person, especially if I'm going to call myself a Christian or any other person of, you know, just basic human decency. I can't write this person off and discard them like an object. This is another person. You know, even if he has a lifestyle I don't understand entirely, even if, you know, I am averse to who he might love or how he might express his love for somebody else, this is still a person, you know. And that's something that I've been very gratified to see, that I succeeded in implanting universal truths and putting a face to, you know, to these different issues that so many people would just normally just, you know, immediately write off.
Well, I think that it was definitely a labor of courage that I am so grateful for as a black gay man myself. Well, certainly there can never be enough of these tales to help an understanding for people that don't know, that are interested in really evolving beyond the archaic types of teachings that drove a lot of people to commit suicide or drove them to drugs and drink. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we have been having an intriguing 30-minute discussion with the founder, publisher, and author at Rainbow Publishing House, Mr. Eddie Saron Pierce. And so as I look at the clock and time is ticking down very quickly, I want to go ahead and get this out. Where can your books be purchased at, Eddie?
Actually, they are available on my website, www.rainbowroompublishing.com. I'll say it again, rainbowroompublishing.com. And even there, I have links. If you don't choose to purchase through my website, I have links from there to my distributor as well as to Barnes & Noble and Amazon.com. Currently, any books that are purchased through my website, currently my second book is the only one that's available on my website. We're actually, I'm very excited to say, going into a third printing of the first book, Love Something Infinite. But Love From Behind, which was just released in June, is available now on the website. And anybody actually who mentions that, I was just thinking about this today, anybody who mentions when they make the purchase through my website, if they mention the interview that we did today, I'm willing to do the shipping for free. But the you know, for anybody else that wants to do the ebook and that sort of thing, Amazon, Barnes and Noble, you can find both books there in all three formats: hardcover, paperback, and ebook.
I think thank you so much for all of that, because I definitely do want to read it, and I thank you for offering the free shipping for the people that mention the show iArtist on A Touch of Grace. This show, this platform, this Blog Talk Radio platform that I feel is anointed by God, has had over 30,000 visitors and climbing. And I just wanted to say that I'm so honored that God saw fit to make me a vessel and have this platform available for so many deserving artists out there who are out there really trying to make a difference in evolution and also into just, you know, humanity. So, Eddie, with that said, I just want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart for taking time out of your busy schedule. And most certainly, GD Grace wants to always be a part of the evolution. And so if there's anything that we can do, you let us know here. If we can help, and most definitely when the third book comes out, I'd be honored to have you back on the show.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I mean, as I explained to you beforehand, I'm just grateful for the opportunity to even be here, that anybody is even interested, you know, in discussing my work, let alone actually purchasing the work. Every day that I live this life, it is just a dream come true. It is just a blessing upon a blessing upon a blessing. So, you know, same back to you. Anything that I can do to help, you know, with what you're doing, I'm there.
All right. Well, thank you. And on that note, I would just like to say it's been a wonderful Sunday afternoon, certainly more enriched because of Eddie being on the show. I want to thank everybody for supporting the show. And the show is just going to continue to get better and better. We've got some exciting artists in the realm of the mainstream that will be a part of the show. So what I would like to leave you with is just definitely love yourself. It's okay to love yourself, because you know what? I love you. You take care, and it's been an incredible experience. Ciao. Okay, Ed.